Hey, good afternoon, Juno. Pat Moore, your host today for Juno Afternoon. You're in tune with KTOO News. It's a couple of seconds before 3 o'clock, and we have a great lineup of guests today on the show. Katie Bowsler or other folks maybe from UAS are going to come in and kind of fill us in on some things that are going on up there, particularly the sound and motion season that's coming up. The fellow is coming over to talk about a show that he's going to be doing at the a program that he's going to be doing workshops at the library for drawing comics for youth and teens. He's got it split up into sessions on Saturday and Sunday. And let's see, Dr. Jamie Womble will be giving the fireside lecture out at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center tonight at 6:30 and 8, and she's going to be showing some pictures and talking about the migration that she's tracking of harbor seals out of Glacier Bay. And let's see who else we've got on. Some Girl Scouts are going to come by and tell us about how you can send a singing Valentine's Day telegram. They're raising money for their trip to Whitehorse. So we'll get to those guests in just a few moments. Right now it's time for National Native News.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Argentina, indigenous rights groups are opposing a proposed reform to the civil code. Though the reform is intended to recognize land rights of indigenous people, activists say it would actually limit their rights. Eilish O'Neill reports.
The new civil code would state that indigenous communities have the right to rural land in order to preserve their culture and homeland. Nilo Caixuqueo, who is Mapuche, says the reforms would exclude many indigenous people.
They don't recognize all of those territories they've taken away from us and that we claim as our own. They don't recognize the hundreds of thousands of indigenous people who live in the cities. In Greater Buenos Aires, there are more than 200 indigenous communities from all over the country. They live in Buenos Aires shantytowns, and they're also demanding their right to have land, to be recognized as communities.
Caixuqueo adds that the civil code is designed to protect private property, while indigenous groups seek communal property rights. Furthermore, he says, lawmakers wrote the proposed reform without consulting indigenous communities. In September, a number of indigenous rights groups gathered in front of Congress to call attention to their concerns. But President Cristina Kirchner's Frente para la Victoria party didn't modify the proposed reform.
We're not asking for anything out of this world. We're only asking for that which belongs to us as a people. We've been dispossessed of our lands and we want them back.
Caixuqueo and other activists are continuing to meet with lawmakers, asking them to remove any mention of indigenous people from the civil code and to instead write separate legislation guaranteeing their rights. If lawmakers do not change the language of the proposed reform, Caixuqueo plans to organize more protests. Argentine legislators are currently on recess and have not commented publicly on the issue. For National Native News, I'm Alicia O'Neill in Buenos Aires, Argentina.
A national holiday in New Zealand this week recognized the Treaty of Waitangi, the country's founding document, which was signed 173 years ago between the British Crown and Māori chiefs. Artist Carl Leonard is currently teaching Māori art and culture in Montana. He says not all tribes signed the document, which gave them equal rights like other British subjects.
There was a lot of dealings between England and our Māori people, but as such, there was no actual, I guess, overseas body overseeing New Zealand. And fears came at that time that perhaps other countries such as France or parts of Europe may annex New Zealand under themselves. So I guess that was part of the driving force to establish the treaty.
Leonard says the treaty has and still plays a role in their culture and society. One thing he says it has helped with is land claims. Leonard says there has been struggles between Maori leaders and government through the years, but relationships are fairly well. Native organizations are supporting the nomination of Sally Jewell as Secretary of the Department of the Interior. Jewell is CEO of the outdoor company REI. The United South and Eastern Tribes supports her nomination, and the National Congress of American Indians is pointing to her experience in energy, conservation, and other issues as an opportunity to work with tribes. President Obama announced his selection this week with outgoing Secretary Ken Salazar. During this week in 2009, First Lady Michelle Obama visited the Interior Department. She told Indian Affairs employees that they have a partner in the White House. The event included an honor song played by an intertribal drum group. The First Lady was presented a shawl. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use Pick Click Give when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Six minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. And my first guest is certainly no stranger to Juneau Afternoon, she having been hostess of the show for most of the first part of this year. Katie B is with us. Katie Bowsler, welcome aboard.
Yeah, just trading chairs here. Good afternoon, Pat.
I'll leave now and you can take over.
Okay, well, my real hat here is I'm the PR and marketing person, director at the university, and we have lots going on.
So what's going on at the university?
Well, I just want to remind people, Damon Stubner was already here earlier this week talking to Andy, but tonight is our third Sound in Motion of the season. We have treasures from the Alaska State Film Library. So Damon Stubner, who's an archivist with the State Library, chooses some videos and films, vintage films, and shows them every year. And it's always a hit. And it's just fun stuff because, you know, just kind of that old movie, that school movie quality or interesting narrators. There's actually a film, a promotional film about the State Museum, narrated by Darth Vader.
Yeah, that's what I heard. We've been spotting it on the radio. I was listening to that earlier this afternoon. I was thinking, so is he going to breathe? You know?
Who knows? James Earl
Welcome
Jones.
Welcome to Alaska.
There you go. Okay, well, there's your invitation. Yeah, and there's also, there's something from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. There's a film about the village in the Aleutians.
Atka.
Right. Oh, thank you. Yes. And there's also, I think, a promotional kind of tourism film about Alaska culture and people and art. So always very interesting. And then there's a question and answer afterwards with Damon about how he, you know, chooses from this vast collection every year. So that should be good. I'll get back to Sound in Motion, but speaking of, things that are coming
right. Just before you go away from that, in case somebody has to wander away, this is at what time tonight?
Sorry. This is 7 o'clock tonight at the Egan Lecture Hall. It is free.
Yeah, so that's the big room with all of the nice seats. It's got a beautiful screen in there and a great sound system.
Yeah.
So it's a great place to watch film.
Yes, it should be very nice.
Yeah.
And then coming up February 15th, coming right up, folks, is a deadline if you want to apply for scholarships. So what's happening with that is UAS offers more than 70 scholarships to students every year. And did you know that some of them go untapped?
Yes.
Because no one applies for them.
This is not unique to UAS, but it's always a shocker to me that there's a bunch of money out there people could be using for education, and it never gets applied for.
Exactly. So we are reminding people that a week from today is the deadline. If you want to get more information about this and get the scholarship application, you just go to uas.alaska.edu, and you can do the campus website search for financial aid there, or just make your way to the financial aid site. It's pretty easy. And this is for scholarships offered through UAS for attendance at the Juneau, Ketchikan, or the Sitka campuses.
Okay, let me lay a little trick here.
Yes.
Okay. Most of these require an essay, and that usually scares people away from applying for them. But here's the trick. If you put together about, maybe 100 words, no more than that, about yourself, you can use it for all of those applications because they're read by different committees. which means that you can use, as long as it, you know, it's enough on point. So you don't have to continually rewrite and write a new essay for each one of these complications. So if you're putting in a bunch of them, you can do that.
Well, I think I see a second career for you, Pat, as a scholarship consultant.
I should probably come down out of the trees and do that.
Yeah, but really, you know, qualifying is easier than you think.
Yes.
And there's a wide variety of interests and degree programs, from Bald Eagle Ecology to theater to general studies. And did you know also that the minimum GPA to apply for many scholarships is a 2.0?
That's
so it's not
that's
like
a C average.
You're not going to qualify.
Yeah.
So yeah, so February 15th, that's the deadline. Go to the website, go to uas.alaska.edu, financial aid website. Also, the financial aid at UAS has a new Facebook page, and where they have all their deadlines and information there, so that'll make it easy. And the Novotny One Stop Center, the Welcome Center, has financial aid people right there at the counter. You just walk up, you want to drive out to campus, and they can help you.
These are also, some of these scholarships are accessible to students who are sophomores or juniors in college. I mean, this is not just money for coming in high school freshmen.
Yes. Yeah, good point. Thank you.
High school seniors.
Right. And then also, I know we had Pete Traxler from the Career Education here last week.
Yeah, he and I had a nice talk about his weekend shows.
Yeah. But just a reminder to people that this is the second annual Saturday sessions at the Technical Education Center downtown. Every Saturday, various times. But mostly it looks like as of tomorrow, it is just 2 to 4 every Saturday through the month, through the 23rd.
There's one of them. Maybe that's already happened. There was one for the nurse for the CNA program that I think was in the morning.
That was
the rest of them. Okay, we're all
correct.
2 to 4. Yeah.
Correct. So tomorrow, 2 to 4 is basic car maintenance.
Yeah.
Now that's where you learn how to check your fluids, change your light bulbs and wiper blades. Gee, I need to go to this. And learn more and more for your car. It's a Tech Ed Center, room 217. It's presented by Tom Dolan. If you want more information about the other Saturday session events, you can also go to our website, uas.alaska.edu, and you look at Saturday sessions. You see Spike the Whale there with his little tool belt and his construction cap and his extra tufts, and he's ready to help you learn stuff like basic car maintenance. Next Saturday is changing your doors. Threshold. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that doesn't sound like much, but the thing that Pete pointed out, he's in the construction program, is that there is a lot of new technology in keeping your house warm, and that the door thresholds have changed a lot. So knowing how to put them in now is not just a simple matter of you know, going and buying the thing and tacking it in on the floor. There's a trick to getting them in there right. So this is really an interesting session.
And you don't want to trip over it either. I know that can happen around here.
Yeah.
I'm not pointing any fingers.
Not taking blame for that. Well, you said that the sound and motion thing is free. The other thing is all of those weekend sessions are free.
Yes.
So this is really service to the community.
This is really to introduce you to what we have to offer in career education, vocational education, and just that stuff that you want to learn. You know, like one of the things that on my to-do list, you know, is to take one of the construction technology classes so that maybe I can actually have some skills around my house other than doing the dishes. So, yeah. But I know we're running out of time here, but getting back to sound and motion, you've heard about sound and motion on this program in various and sundry sort of surgical ways so far. But just to remind everybody, this is our fourth annual Arts Series at the university. And last week we had John Elliott here. We were kind of telling you about our events at the Rec Center for First Fridays in February, March, and April. But I just want to give everybody just sort of a quick overview that we have lots of great arts events, and February is completely full every Friday. It's not like Evening at Egan where it's every Friday for 3 or 4 months. This is more sporadic, but February, every Friday. So, again, we have Treasures from the Alaska State Film Library with Damon Steubner tonight, 7 o'clock, free at the lecture hall. Next Friday is our first Whoosh Canadian Poetry Slam at the Egan Lecture Hall. Now, a little note here, folks, to poets who want to participate. If you want to participate, you need to sign up at 6:30. And the program, the show, begins at 7. It'll be co-hosted by a UAS student, Kate Laster, and also Poetry Slam champion, and a UAS alumni, Jackie Boucher. and or Boucher, I should say. Boucher. Mm-hmm. It's much nicer than Boucher, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Jackie Boucher.
It's poetic, as a matter of fact.
Yes, and they're great, great poets, and this should be a lot of fun.
As a matter of fact, I can think of six words that won't rhyme with Boucher that will rhyme with Boucher, so I would say we're in good shape.
There you go. Okay, so yeah. February 15th, Poetry Slam at the University for the first time. They also have a great Facebook page. You'll see posters around town. But it's really a neat thing, Pat, because you can either just recite a poem or you can compete for Slam Champ for that Poetry Slam where you bring three poems. Then 22nd of February, I want to give everybody a heads up, and you will be hearing more about this, To Russia with Love, an Alaskan's Journey. This is Vic Fisher, yeah. Who's an absolute founding father, and I'd say the Alaskan legend, a really iconic figure. He's in his 80s now. He has just published what the author of The Fat Man is calling an epic memoir. So, you know, Vic Fisher was born living in Russia with German parents during the times of Stalin and Hitler.
Yeah.
And Eleanor Roosevelt helped get their family out of Russia. Then he ends up fighting in World War II against his former peers, Russians and Germans.
Yeah.
Then he makes his way to Alaska and is instrumental in the planning of the state. Co-authors our Constitution as a member, a delegate to the Constitutional Convention. Then he's a faculty of UAF and UAA, and of course head of the
INCR,
the Institute for
Social and Economic Research.
Exactly. So yeah, just fascinating career. But what's really interesting about this book is the reviews are saying this isn't just a self-aggrandizing, oh, wasn't I great.
No, it reads like James Bond.
Okay. Yeah. Have you read it?
No. I've read parts of it.
Yeah.
Excerpts.
Oh, my gosh.
But I got to get the book.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about knowing that he's coming here on February 22nd is there's enough time to get the book. Which is always cool. If you've read the thing before you walk into the lecture, you've got questions. You know,
I'm inspired.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go down to Hearthside and just see what's going on.
Yeah.
So that's gonna be 7 o'clock at the lecture hall, 22nd. So
good.
Mark your calendars.
Almost done, Katie. One more March 1st thing. Tell them about the film.
So we've got a Argentinian film on the 1st of March at the Rec Center, and then the 29th of March, another heads up, College Track 3 premiere, which Pat Race, well, he's here in another capacity today, but he is the producer of that. And it's just a wonderful part three documentary of following Alaska Native kids from Southeast Alaska through college since high school 2004. Where are they now? Well, you can find out on the 29th of March at the lecture hall with a panel discussion afterwards.
Exciting happenings at UAS, open to the public, free to everyone. Thank you so much for bringing us up to date. And folks, don't forget the scholarship deadline is next weekend, right?
February 15th. And if you want to know anything about any of this stuff, just go to uas.alaska.edu. You've got the Sound and Motion icon there. We've got the whole schedule.
Okay, good enough. Thank you very much. Incidental music today is from an album called Largo by Bad Meldow. We'll be hearing a little more of his fine piano stylings as we go through the rest of the program. Right now, one of my favorite topics, there is a cartoonist in town. And I was telling him before we opened the microphones that I get up every morning and read the funny papers. I have since I was about that high. And I think cartoons are a wonderful way to communicate. Lee Post is here, and you're going to do a workshop teaching youngsters how to cartoon and what comics are about and like that over at the library, right?
Oh, that's correct, yeah.
Yeah. So tell us how you come to be the person who can show us how to cartoon.
Well, that's a good question. I've always been a doodler and a drawer, or an artist, and I had the opportunity to do a comic strip for the Anchorage Press for about 6 years.
Anchorage Press is a weekly up in Anchorage, right?
That's correct.
Are they still publishing?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, okay, yeah. So. And I had the luxury of having an editor who basically asked me to do a comic strip and didn't give me any other editorial controls other than that. And so I had 6 years of just playing around with comics and the form, in learning how to tell a story and learning just how to have fun with art.
So did you ever print a blank square and tell them it was a polar bear in a snowstorm?
Just about, yeah. Tried that a couple times. Tight deadlines.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what my class is about for kids, is not teaching how to draw comics, but how to communicate ideas and how to have fun with drawing.
Yeah.
And so I've got a class tomorrow morning from 10 to noon for second to fifth graders, and that'll be doing a lot of drawing workshops on doodling and learning to really fall in love with the pencil. And then I have another class that will be on Saturday afternoon at the Douglas Library for 5th to 12th graders. And then the second part of that class, which kids can drop into if they miss the first class, at the Valley Library on Sunday.
And is it a repeat of the same sequence that you do in downtown, or is it different?
No, it's completely different. So Kids can go to both, or they can go to either. Or basically, it'll be building on basically newspaper comic strips the first day, and then kind of working towards drawing a comic book the second day.
Well, I need to stick an oar in here. There's a book called Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain. Mm-hmm. It came out probably 20 years ago now. And the author starts with the supposition that people somehow get trained in school to think that there are people who are artists and people who are not. And she very much argues against that and says everyone is an artist. It's just that it takes longer for some of us to learn to express ourselves with art. And I think that's true. So I think what I'm trying to say is nobody should keep their kid away from these sessions you're doing.
Well, that's absolutely, and I'm a good example of that. My specialty was cognitive neurocognition, and I'm a juvenile probation officer in Anchorage during the day and work with a lot of data and then do the art in the evening. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, so even if you have a youngster who draws stick figures, bring them in, because you can open up a door here really nicely.
Oh, especially.
Yeah, yeah. Pat Race is here as the host, taking this guy around. So what have you done with him while he's been down here? Is this your first trip down to Juneau?
I picked him up from the airport. That was pretty successful.
Hey, you got that, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Lee's been down here a bunch, actually. Lee and I have known each other for several years now. We exhibited together at the Alternative Press Expo in San Francisco, and that was a lot of fun. And I've been looking for an opportunity to bring him down to teach workshops. He's done workshops in other parts of the state, and they've been really successful, and people love him. And so I thought it'd be great to bring him here to Juneau and share him with our community.
Beyond bringing him down and watching him do this, is there any possibility of a Race Smith collaboration here of some kind?
Oh, Lee's work is actually on display at our gallery right now, the Alaska Robotics Gallery, which is down on Front Street, 220 Front Street, and you can go in and see some of his work there. It's we put it up for First Friday last week, and it'll be up through the rest of the month.
Outstanding. So
he's going to be doing some sketching while he's here, and it's a great opportunity to come out and meet him and see his work and learn a little bit about it. And if you're not a kid and you want to kind of like drop in and maybe draw a little bit, go for it.
Yeah.
It'd be great to see you at the library.
Yeah. That is possible.
Yeah.
Parents who accompany children should bring their own drawing materials with them. Eh?
Or they can read a book. Either or. Whatever they're into.
Preferably what do they call them, a graphic novel.
Yeah.
Lee, you've actually contributed a chapter to a graphic novel about Alaska, something called A Native Lad.
That's correct. Yeah. I did the first chapter in that, and it was a book about Benny Benson and the path to statehood.
Yeah. So when you do how does a graphic novel chapter differ from a comic strip?
Basically scope. And so just trying to decide, going from, you know, kind of the difference between a short film and a movie. And so trying to tell, you know, a couple sentences worth of material for a newspaper comic strip versus having to think of kind of all of the things that come with a movie of cinematics and your characters and evolving a narrative. And so it just requires a lot of logistical work. And so that's kind of some of the things we'll be exploring in the class, and how you make the jump from telling a very simple joke to basically getting a story out there, either a personal story or a fictional story that you've made up, and giving the kids a building block on how to do that and how to think about it.
Back in the dark ages when I was an undergraduate, I was ratting around in the library trying to desperately to find something to do other than the work I was supposed to be doing, and I came across a collection of comic strips. And I remember that. And then, like, sometime in the last 4 or 5 years, I started noticing that the Juno libraries have been adding to their collection with graphic novels. I wander into the library now, and I'll see in the new books section 3, 4, 5 new graphic novels. When did this form start to become something that you would expect to be in a library instead of an underground comic shop?
Probably in the last 10 years or so. It started in the late 80s, but in the last 10 years, they've had a lot of success in some books, really good fictional graphic novels, but then a lot of really good nonfiction journalistic graphic novels that really caught people's attention and pulled them in with their narrative and having an interesting take on world events. And so Joe Sacco has a couple really good books called Palestine, and is it Sefer Gorzad, about his time in Serbia. And then one of the classes I did for the Anchorage Public Library was on Persepolis, which was about the revolution in Iran, and which also became a award-winning movie. And so those are some of the things that are going on there. So it's not just all superheroes and manga. It's also things that have kind of an adult focus and require, have a lot of rewards in reading them.
The other thing that's kind of interesting is along that same development within the last 5 or 10 years, we started to see serious comic cartoon pictures. I don't know what the term I'm trying to find here, but we started to see not just cartoons, but more serious topics in film, using animated techniques to communicate a message, and totally animated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just sort of our communication evolving. There are a lot of other countries that have been doing that for a long time, and for whatever reason, the way that our art, our motion pictures evolved, it was always kind of a little kid's thing, and it was sort of pigeonholed that way.
Yeah.
But I think we're really maturing, and there are a lot of amazing stories that are now available as animated films or as graphic novels, and I think people will be surprised if they haven't approached that medium in a while at the depth.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's what I'm noticing, too, is that that graphic art has become its own, is coming into its own. It's always been there, I think. But, So your workshops are going to be a lot of fun, but underneath the bottom of that, there's a real educational message, I think, involved here.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And so I don't want to give away too much, but part of the trick is having kids have a lot of fun and really keep their pencils moving and then basically discover that they've made full pages of comic strips by the end without even knowing.
Absolutely. Hey, you're sneaky. So this is starts Saturday morning. What time?
10 to noon for the children's class, and then 2 to 5 for the teen class.
And children is 2nd through 5th grades, right?
Yeah, okay. And all this information is available through the public library.
On the website.
Yeah.
Okay, exactly. Good enough. All right. And there's no charge for these?
They're absolutely free, and we're looking forward to seeing as many people as can fit in there.
Okay, so bring the kids on down. This is number 2 pencil to immortal fame is where we're going here, right?
Yep.
Okay, hey, thanks so much for coming to town and bringing the workshops.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 8th of February, 2013. It's the birthday of the poet Elizabeth Bishop, born in Worcester, Massachusetts, 1911. Went to Vassar, wrote poetry there, and from her mentor, the poet Marianne Moore, she learned that she could write poems that were not about big ideas like love or death, but just about looking at objects. It's the birthday of John Grisham, born Jonesboro, Arkansas, 1955. He was a successful lawyer. He set out to write a novel about one of his court cases. It was called A Time to Kill. It came out in 1989, did not do well. John Grisham then read an article in Writer's Digest magazine about the rules of suspense, and to use that formula to write a thriller about a law student who realizes the firm that he works for is connected to the mafia. And that was The Firm, a huge bestseller in 1991. Kate Chopin, born in St. Louis, 1850, on this day. She came from a successful family. She was a young socialite, a Southern belle. She got married, had six children. She was a devoted wife and mother. But then her husband died, and then her mother died, and Kate Chopin was depressed. Her doctor encouraged her to write because she was a good letter writer. And so over a period of about 15 years, Kate Chopin wrote almost 100 short stories and two novels, At Fault and The Awakening, in 1899. It was The Awakening that caused a controversy at the time, the story of a woman who gives up being a wife and mother, has an affair, and walks into the sea, perhaps a suicide. It was heavily censored and criticized at the time, now considered an important work by an early feminist author, The Awakening. And it's the birthday of Neil Cassady, born in Salt Lake City, 1926. A con man in and out of jail, came to New York City, met Jack Kerouac and Allen Ginsberg, who idolized him. To them, Neil Cassady embodied everything that they embraced in theory. Neil Cassady was the inspiration for the character Dean Moriarty, the hero of Jack Kerouac's On the Road. Allen Ginsberg wrote about him, and Neil Cassady appears in The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test by Tom Wolfe as a friend of Ken Kesey's. Here's a poem for today by Gavin Ewart, Sonnet, Daffodils. Wordsworth really loved daffodils. He said they were flashers. Certainly they must be the most exhibitionistic flowers there are, trumpeting their presence in yellow, by far the most visible color. I grant that after a long, hard winter, it's warming to see snowdrops and crocuses in that iron earth, and the very first daffodils, what a cliché, seem a resurrection, something it even seems appropriate to make a fuss about. They look so perfect, though a bit self-conscious. After a week or two, however, when spring is established and everywhere you look, there are oceans of daffodils, as arrogant as pop stars, they begin to seem ordinary. You take them for granted, like a love affair, fading, they shrivel and go crinkly, papery, and tired. The spring, too, teenagers witness, has its own kind of boredom. Sonnet, Daffodils by Gavin Ewart, from Or Where a Young Penguin Lies Screaming, published by Littlehampton Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
About 27 minutes before 4 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. You're in the middle of Juneau Afternoon, and Pat Moore, your host today. My next guest is going to be talking tonight on two occasions. She speaks at 6:30 and then repeats the speech at 8 p.m. at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. National Park Service biologist Jamie Womble is here, and she's been gluing transmitters to the tops of seals' heads and watching blips on computers to discover where they go and what they do. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, Pat. How are
you?
Yeah,
so how did you arrive at the concept of gluing a little transmitter to a seal's head? What kind of study was, why were you doing this?
Well, that's a great question, and I guess the primary reason is that seals in Glacier Bay had undergone pretty precipitous declines over the last several decades, but there's relatively little information known about their ecology, how they make a living, where they go in the winter, do they even stay in Glacier Bay in the winter. So one aspect of our study was to try and identify what these animals were doing in the winter. Were they staying in Glacier Bay? Were they leaving? If they were leaving, were they potentially encountering any threats? With a population that's undergoing declines, I guess one of the basic pieces of information that can be really helpful is just where they're going and what they could potentially be interacting with that could influence their population dynamics.
So when you started looking at the data that you were getting back, I understand that you were a little surprised at some of the results?
Yeah, we had some very surprising and intriguing results. Typically, I think most people think of harbor seals as being...
Harbor seals, right.
As being...
stay at home, right.
Right.
Okay.
Somewhat sedentary or near shore animals. And right away, we had a few individuals that once we tagged the seals in Glacier Bay in September, some of those made very extensive migrations. We had one juvenile female that left Glacier Bay and traveled all the way up to Prince William Sound, which is about straight line distance, about 900 kilometers just to Prince William Sound. And then she spent the winter there and then traveled back to Glacier Bay the following spring.
So this was a surprise because the scientific view was also that harbor seals were fairly tightly located to one area. Have you formed any theories as to why this is going on? Why are these seals being as peripatetic as they are?
Well, that's a great question, and I guess we don't really have the answer, but we certainly have some ideas or hypotheses. Harbor seals are capital breeders, so they spend much of the winter stocking up on food and energy.
What's a capital breeder?
It's an animal that stores energy for use at a later time.
Like whales that
yeah,
feed
for
up
reproduction.
Here and then go down to California.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so, and then they have a pretty brief parental care period. So when they're not caring for their young, they're essentially free to travel where they need to go. And we make the presumption that these animals are traveling to areas where they can obtain energy-rich prey. So in the winter, that's their time to do what they need to do to stock up for the next breeding season. So we think that they're probably moving to areas of higher prey availability.
So did this seal, the juvenile female seal that you tracked up to Prince William Sound, is there a population of harbor seals there that she joined? Was she going to back to the old neighborhood or something like that?
Well, this is a juvenile animal, and it's not unusual for juveniles to make somewhat extended movements or migrations when they're young. But she did travel back, and you're correct, there is a population of harbor seals in Prince William Sound. We weren't actually observing her there, so we don't know if she actually joined that population, but given that she traveled back, probably not. We do know from some other work done by colleagues that there are overwintering aggregations of herring in Prince William Sound, so some of her locations were... near those aggregations, so we were assuming that she was maybe there to forage.
I guess I don't know if maybe your data, if you can remember this. Did she go like in a straight line? Did it look like she was hunting and seeking, or did it look like she knew where she was going?
When she initially left Glacier Bay, she went out to the Gulf of Alaska pretty quickly, and actually went all the way off of the continental shelf. Spent a few days out there circling around, and then made a pretty direct path up into Prince William Sound. And it's once she arrived there then that she was more resident for a couple of months, and then eventually made a pretty direct path back.
And she didn't get a phone call on the satellite,
no,
right?
Right. Right.
Hey, come on up to there. This is really interesting. And the really interesting thing about it, it must have been, the seals are fascinating, but the scientists have got to be totally, you're working with a crew, right?
Yeah, there's a large group of people that have contributed to this work. A lot of hard work and dedication from the very start of just planning the project to capturing the animals and deploying the tags, and then, you know, working on the data analysis and getting to these very interesting results.
So when you're sitting around and you're looking at this and you're seeing this seal that's not doing what you had expected to do, there's an element of real excitement here, I would imagine. Something to talk about over coffee.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, and you know, it really makes you ask this question of why. And for someone who like me, who's very curious, it's a pretty exciting thing to do. There have been some recent studies documenting associations with seals and sea lions and fur seals with other oceanographic features like eddies and things like that. So it makes you start thinking about particular environmental features that these animals may be cueing in on.
So there's a somewhere, I think it's the National Geographic, has done a film where they drain the oceans. So I can imagine that you're seeing something like that when you're looking at this blip moving across the screen, or however your readout comes on this thing. Is there an element of that? Do you kind of have a sense of the visual that the fish must be, or that the seal must be experiencing at the time? Do you think about it that way?
Well, we do try to think about it that way. Sometimes it's a bit difficult, but, you know, it's very interesting just to think about what, you know, we see the ocean from the surface.
Yeah.
And beneath the surface is much different. There are underwater canyons and all these different oceanographic features that influence productivity in different regions of the ocean, which then has implications and influences these upper trophic level species. So I think the more that we can get a grasp of how these features influence seals and whales and sea lions, you know, the better we'll be able to do a much better job at just predicting where they're going and conserving them in the end.
When you're looking at the return from the satellite radio,
mm-hmm.
what do you actually see? Can you describe what it looks like when you're checking in on your seal to see where she is?
So when we have a satellite tag that transmits to a satellite,
right.
And then that information is relayed to our computer through a series of programs, and actually able to do something as simple as just pull those locations up in Google Earth and see where our seal is going, using some different programs that have been made available by USGS. So
you can actually draw a track, I would imagine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can
okay.
see individual dots or circles for locations, and then you can see how those circles progress in time. So you can follow the track of the animal. You can see where it's spending a lot of time or when it's uh-huh. you know, traveling much faster.
So the ones that hung around town, Glacier Bay, which is where you tag these animals, when you're looking at that output, do you have a display that shows a whole bunch of different transmitter, like different colored dots or something like that? Are you looking at something that is like a, you know, my house, your house, the folks down the street kind of thing?
Kind of, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Essentially it's just a map of Glacier Bay and, you know, the outer coast of Glacier Bay and the Gulf of Alaska, and each individual seal has a different color-coded dot.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, you can just follow that dot in space and time to see where they're going and the different types of habitats that they're using.
Yeah. No, this is wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. How to keep track of your seal?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, the satellite transponders that you're gluing. First of all, what kind of glue did you use? What sticks a transponder to a seal's head well enough to keep it there for months?
We use epoxy.
Okay.
And then the animals molt annually, and when they shed their hair, these tags just fall off.
Just fall off. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So they're not stuck with them for life.
That's right.
Probably they comment on the interesting piece of jewelry and know who gave it to you, right? So I'm greatly personifying a seal at this point. There's a name for that. I can't remember what the verb is, but anyway. So is there any possibility that the seal knows or has a conscious awareness? Is there any conscious awareness that you've tagged this seal, do you think? Does it mark them in any way? Do the other seals look at them and say, you're weird.
That's a great question.
Where'd you get the strange hat, dude?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I don't know. You know, that's a really interesting question, and there have been similar questions with respect to birds.
I mean, that seal could have gone up to Prince William Sound because she was having a bad hair day.
right.
No. But it's fun to play with ideas like that. So tonight you're gonna show us what?
Yeah, so tonight I'll be talking about some of the work that I've been doing over about the last decade on harbor seals in Glacier Bay, and I'm going to focus on two primary topics. One will be focused on a little bit about their diving behavior,
okay,
how deep they're diving in Glacier Bay and how it differs between habitats. And then the second part I'll focus on these post-breeding season migrations, where these animals are going in the winter and what they've been up to.
Outstanding. Dr. Jamie Womble will be the lecturer at the Fireside Talk tonight at Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. There's a show at 6:30. It's repeated at 8 p.m., a wonderful opportunity for the family to come on out and hear this scientist and to find out a little more about some of the wonderful sea animals that surround us here in Juneau. Thanks for coming on the show and telling us about it.
Thanks for having me.
Right down on you. Sometimes you're underwater, sometimes exposed to air. One thing to remember, if you want to survive out there, you've got to hold on tight. Find a place that feels just right and hold on tight. Let the waves go rolling by, hold on tight. Find a place that feels just right and hold on tight. And you'll make it through the changing of the tide. They've got to hold on tight. Find a place that feels just right and hold on tight. Let the waves go rolling by. Hold on tight. Find a place that feels just right and hold on tight. And you'll make it through the changing of the tide. Seaweed and anemone when you're living on the edge, you've got to get a grip. Let the ocean roll away. Let the tide rip.
So we're going to hear about animals that are affected by tides tonight at the Mendenhall Glacial Visitor Center. Dr. Jamie Womble will be doing a fireside lecture 6:30 and 8 p.m. Right now, listen to the music.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. We are the brownies, the singing brownies. We'll hear you share.
Those are the members of Brownie, Girl Scout Brownie Troop 4036, and what you just heard, you can actually hear, you can actually send to someone. These young ladies that you just heard singing are going to celebrate Valentine's Day at your wish basically for the wonderfully appropriate sum of $40, you can hire these young ladies to go to your designated sweetheart's place of work, place of home, place of wherever he or she happens to be, and they will do, one song or two, Joan?
Two.
They'll do two songs, and they'll deliver a valentine, and they'll deliver a little treat, too. So this is a fundraiser because these girls are trying to get themselves together to go to White Horse this next summer, right? Okay. So who have I got here? Say your name, each one of you. Jump up to a microphone and tell me your name.
Eva.
Eva who?
Sturm.
Eva Sturm. And?
Esme Judy.
Okay.
Annika Schwartz.
Elsie Copin.
Adara Allen.
We're fighting to get to the mic.
Carly Alsup.
Minta Short.
Talia Gerger.
Bronwyn Byford.
Okay, so this is the crowd, and these are the ones, right?
Oh, there is one more. There's Grace Sandwich.
Okay, Grace Sandwich. Okay, but couldn't be here today.
Correct.
Okay. The voice you hear in the background, those of you that listen to the show on Mondays, will certainly recognize as Joan Pardis. She's the host of Juno Afternoon on Mondays. So, and the wonderful ukulele background that was provided by Julie Copen, who's here with the thing. We're going to hear another song in a couple of minutes, but first I wanted to find out, why are you going to White Horse? What's up?
Well, we're going to White Horse. The girls really like to camp, and they also like to horseback ride.
Uh-huh.
So last year, my daughter Eva and I were up at the Sky High Wilderness Ranch, and we decided that, the Brownies would really like to come. So they've been raising money all year long. They sang holiday songs, and they have had several different fundraisers. This is another fundraiser. They've sold nuts. They've sold Girl Scout cookies. We also have some sponsors. We'd like to thank Fred Myers and IBEW and Hecla Greens Creek Mine. They've donated money so the girls can reach their goals. They've been working hard at it. But I have to say, if it wasn't for Julie and her musical abilities and her great ideas, she's definitely leading the girls as we brand ourselves the singing brownie troupe.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, this is really cool. Now, how does somebody put the order in?
Oh, it's very easy.
And I understand there's a limit, right?
We're almost at the limit, but
okay.
There's a few left. It's singingbrownies@gmail.com. If you can send an email there and say where and when it can be delivered on Valentine's Day, then we'll get back to you and see if we have room in the schedule, because it's all about moving us all around town.
Yeah.
But we have a limit of 10, and we have firm 8 and maybe even 10, but you should put your order in because it's all about logistics. But the girls are really excited. They've been working. They've been making valentines. We have treats. We have flowers. We have these songs, and they are ready to go into action as little Cupids in Juno.
Oh, hey, this is, can you think of anything better that you could do for your lover on Valentine's Day than to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 brownie scouts come in and armed with a ukulele behind them, sing two songs, deliver a Valentine's card in your stead, and a little treat package as well, right?
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, what a great idea. Can we have another sample?
Of course.
Okay. Everybody get microphoned up. And here we go.
Skinnamarinky-dinky-dink, skinnamarinky-doo, I love you. Skinnamarinky-dinky-dink, skinnamarinky-doo, I love you. I love you in the morning and in the afternoon. I love you in the evening, underneath the moon, though. Skinnamarinky-dinky-dink, skinnamarinky-doo, I love you. I love you.
Amazing. Hey, big round of applause out there. Okay, so it's singingbrownies@gmail.com. That's the place to go in order to order up this fantastic opportunity for something that is practically, you couldn't get this anywhere else. You couldn't do this. And Hollywood, eat your heart out. These ladies are ready for you. They're bringing it on. Okay, thank you so much, Joan Pardis, for bringing them all down and for doing this thing one more time. You gotta get on the Gmail right now and fire off a Gmail to singingbrownies@gmail.com and say, I want a singing Valentine delivered to so-and-so at such place, and they will try to work you into their schedule. Outstanding. Thank you.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
Hello, I'm Hunter Doan. I'm 15 years old and I live in Seward, Alaska.
Hunter Doan is all of those things and a teenage activist and advocate. Since the age of 11, Hunter's been involved with a statewide organization, Alaska Youth for Environmental Action. With AYA, he's traveled the state to participate in trainings and educational events. He's lobbied on behalf of the environment in Capitol offices, both in Juneau and in Washington, D.C., which means, by this point, he's had quite a bit of experience talking with Alaska's elected leaders.
You know, the experience just depends. It varies. For the most part, they're just pretty normal people. And they're a little different around youth, but I think it really makes an impact when youth talk to them. It resonates a little more loud, if you could say, when youth talk to them over just the regular adults they see every day.
Hunter is also hard at work closer to home. He's concerned about the possible effects of coal dust on him and his family and neighbors in Seward, as well as the larger scale issues of ocean acidification and genetically modified salmon. Megan McBride is program manager for Alaska Youth for Environmental Action.
Hunter is an amazing young man. He has this incredible charm about him. He connects really well with other people of all ages. So he's been a great leader in the AYA program because he's been able to learn a lot about really important issues and then help educate his peers, other teens in AYA, about those issues.
I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
Little updated weather forecast just received here at KTOO, and we have cloudy weather forecast for tonight with patchy fog. We're looking at rain showers this evening. And then the rain will probably join up with some snow late with lows around 34, southeast winds 10 miles per hour. Saturday, the forecast looks very similar. We're going to have rain, probably a snow level around 800 feet. It'll rise up to about 1,200 feet in the afternoon, highs around 39, southeast winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. So with those temperatures, we're going to expect a lot of that snow to melt, and we'll still have a lot of water to slosh through out on the streets and in driveways and other places like that. Saturday night, raining, heavy at times, kind of like it was last night. Lows around 36, southeast winds 15 to 25 miles per hour.
Leaders in business, government, and education will unite for the Innovation Summit February 11th through the 13th at Centennial Hall in Juneau. This is an opportunity for businesses in Southeast to develop innovative thinking for the growth of the region. Speakers include Patrick Quinton of the Portland Development Commission and Alaska Communications CEO Anand Vadapalli. For more information, go to jedc.org. This message brought to you by the Juneau Economic Development Council.
lots of possibilities for entertaining tonight. We've got at 7 o'clock up on campus, the treasures from the State Film Library, 6:30 and 8 o'clock. The talks by Jamie Womble out at the Fireside Lectures at Mendenhall Glacier Visitors Center. Just a whole bunch of wonderful activities through the course of the weekend. And don't forget that if you are interested in having the Singing Valentine's Girl Scout Troop serenade your lover, you want to do singing brownies at gmail.com right away. This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We're also on a set of translators throughout the area in the Valley and Auk Bay. We're on K276AF at 103.1. Lemon and Schweitzer Creek is K269AO at 101.7. K201AM serves Gustavus at 88.1. K220BT at Hoonah at 91.9. And Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, KTOO is K210AS at 89.9.